welcome to an all-new episode of the McFuture Podcast. I'm Steve Factor, and today we're going to talk about free speech. And part two comes out next week for everybody, but you can listen to it right now if you subscribe on Patreon, just patreon.com/McFuture. Today's show is about something that I kind of warned about in an article I wrote, I think it was in 2013 or 2014, called Intolerance We Trust, which is where people started banning speakers from all of these different venues and universities. And I kind of saw where that was going. I wrote that whole piece really satirically. And I was like, oh, surely this will end all of this. And once they see the ridiculousness of not letting people talk, this is all going to stop and de-escalate. No, it didn't. It has not at all. But what's happening now is our freedoms are actually being compromised, but it's happening so subtly. And especially if you're not someone who is constantly on social media or not really plugged into news, like basically if you have a life of any kind and you have kids and a 401k plan and I don't know, some really decent parking spot near your office, you probably don't pay attention to these things. But this series is for you, because there is something incredibly maniacal happening here that I think is subverting our democracy. And I know that sounds very dramatic, and I feel like I need dramatic music. Maybe I'll add it in later in the post-production. There is something seriously malicious happening. And I think it's happening. This is the most frustrating thing. It's happening with good intentions. I always tell people that an idiot with good intentions can do more damage than an evil mastermind. Because when you feel like you're helping, you feel righteous, even if you're not that bright, which I think is what's happening right now. Now, some of you may not like where this goes. I'm going to try to keep it light. And in fact, this is the second or maybe even the third time I'm recording this, because I'm trying to get the tone right, because it is serious, but I also want to keep it entertaining. And I'm going to drop some jokes in because I need to keep this sane for me even. If I do my job, you're going to see the world very differently. In this episode, we're going to talk about the debacle that is social media and how to fix it, and also why free speech online matters so much. But next week, everything goes dark. And when I say next week, if you're a Patreon subscriber, you can get it right now. But that one is wicked. So you're not going to want to miss it. But I think you need this episode for the setup, which is great too. But we're building up here. We're building up. All right, let me jump right in. If you're like me at all, you probably have a guilty pleasure or maybe a bathroom boondoggle that involves social media. And you probably noticed people are getting just a little bit touchy these days. Everything's become political. And some of the vitriol is insane. People ganging up on people they don't like, getting them fired or deplatformed from social media or from different events, or getting their channels demonetized. It's like this battle going on online. It's invisible to the world. You could walk outside and everything looks normal, but the guy you just saw walking out of that store, the exterior says hipster. The inside says, oh, I'm a raging freedom fighter who just won a battle online. This guy, David Pakman, who is a pretty progressive guy who does commentaries on politics, he mentioned a conservative, Gavin McInnes, who's been banned, and his whole thing got demonetized. In fact, this might get banned. I have no idea who's listening or who's being banned. And I get it. Look, a lot of people are offended by things. I have no ill will towards you. I get it. Everyone should be nice to each other. Everyone should use the right pronouns, and everyone should be polite. But forcing niceness is still force. It's so hard to make the world conform to your sensitivities. And that's the process we're in right now. We are bystanders to a jihad. Not the kind that beheads heretics, but it's kind of like a gentle jihad, and it trades messy, decisive cutlery for this slow kind of dehumanization. And it starves these irredeemable sinners, whether they're real or imagined, and it's suffocating free speech. And this whole thing plays like a video game. Likes and follows and retweets earn you virtue points on these platforms. It's like, oh, look at all these people that agree with me. And we're going to gang up on this person we all disagree with. And the top virtuosos, they used to spend their time in lockers in the 80s, or at least in 80s comedies. They may be losers in real life, but online, man, online, they are heroes who lead heroic mobs into battle until they screw up, and then they become the hunted. This game has no winners, but it does have middlemen. And these middlemen, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, they host all these different flavors of bad taste and disinformation and partisanship and extremism. So this gentle jihad has forced them to make more and more content decisions. They're deciding who or what are they going to ban or block completely. Whose ideas are they going to recommend and prioritize? You know, like when you go on those lists and they show you, oh, you should also follow. And it's always a Kardashian. And you're like, I'm not interested in Kardashians. They're like, no. You need to be interested in Kardashians because this is a distraction from all the pain in the outside world. You must follow at least one Kardashian. And they decide who they're going to squelch. There's a whole bunch of articles written on shadow bans. Basically, it looks like you're on Twitter and it looks like you're on YouTube, but your video's not really being recommended to anyone or your channel's not being recommended to. You kind of die the slow death on their platform because no one sees any of your stuff. And they decide who gets to earn or spend money. Like, that's a real decision because you see all of these people who've invested tons of time in building up a following, investing in equipment, putting stuff together, putting these videos online, buying advertising to promote them. They are investing heavily in all of these platforms. But guess what? Guess who doesn't care when you get banned? The platforms. The more frequent these decisions become, and the more inconsistent or opaque, like you have no idea how they decided to ban your channel. Like a lot of the letters or emails they send are kind of BS. So these middlemen start looking less like platforms and more like editorial enterprises. And the difference is huge. There's a code of law called Section 230. It protects companies like Google or any platform from liability. Here's a quote from Derek Bambauer, who's a professor of law at the University of Arizona. So this explains what this piece of law says. In short, I promise, I'm not going to be reading you law passages. Maybe Bible passages at some point, and we could talk about the Ark. But here's what he says. If I put up a review of your restaurant on, say, Yelp, that falsely claims that the place is overrun with cockroaches and rats, Yelp is immune from getting sued for defamation. You can still sue me, of course, if I'm the information content provider. This remains true even if Yelp knows that the review is false. That's really important, too. So media outlets like newspapers, they all carry this liability, but platforms don't. And that means that, you know, if some idiot posts a video of him shooting up a place, then the platform doesn't get sued, which kind of makes sense. But now that these companies are becoming more editorial, it's attracting a lot of attention. So Republicans and Democrats are already talking about eliminating this protection for these companies. But it's also pretty clear that they don't fully understand this. So I think they're trying to use Section 230 in ways that it's not meant to be used. You know, anytime government people get involved, you can't really tell if it's stupid or liar. You know, like you can't really tell if they're too dumb to understand the law because they haven't read it, which a lot of them haven't, or they're just liars who are trying to use it as a political wedge. If 230 got crippled in some way, that would flood these companies, Google and Facebook and Twitter, with all kinds of liability lawsuits for all the streamed killings and defamation and stolen content that every kook and grandmother has posted. This would be a death blow to their business. Even if they manage somehow to remain protected as platforms, they're still not going to escape regulation because they're these private, unaccountable arbiters of free speech. They're getting to decide who speaks and who doesn't. That in and of itself is going to attract a bunch of scrutiny. And yeah, in 2019, access to these platforms is free speech. As of now, private businesses, they're not obligated to put your message out there or to even host you on their platform, and certainly not to amplify it. They're not obligated to enforce free speech. That only applies to government, unless you can prove a couple things. The first is monopoly power. These guys have become the de facto way to communicate with your friends, your family, your colleagues, your fans. And a lot of these people paid to acquire all of these likes and followers. And they're mainly accessible on these platforms. It's not like those platforms give you their email addresses. So you're basically stuck. And once you get excommunicated, all those people go away. And the power to keep you from these connections is effectively depriving you of free speech. All of them together, basically on the same day, decided to demonetize the same users at the same time. To the extent that this is coordinated also proves this concentration of power, right? So only a few companies need to get on a conference call. They don't even need, if they got together, they wouldn't even need a full conference room. They could sit in one of those little ones. It's like a phone booth, which looks really sad in a shared workspace. And the simple fact is that Facebook, especially, has abused people's trust over and over. They've misused our phone numbers, all kinds of weird marketing, facial recognition they use, data breaches, and like battered spouses. We're all still there. Like, oh, maybe tomorrow will be better. No, tomorrow will not be better. It will suck just the same. But you're stuck. And the fact that you feel stuck possibly demonstrates monopoly power. When a company has the power to cut you off from an essential good or service, that's a pretty serious thing. What if one day Verizon finds out you're a furry? You know, someone who likes to dress up like their favorite stuffed animal, but you discriminate against other furries. You're a fur-shist. Sorry, I couldn't resist. And you run a website that clearly discriminates against certain furries. What if they said, hey, this is not the kind of person we want on our network? Would you be okay with that? What if Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, which now is joined with Sprint, what if all three of them said, yeah, you know, this isn't the kind of person we want on our network? How would you feel about that? My argument is that social media is becoming just as essential a service. And once it does, and it's equally concentrated as an industry, your rights to access it have to be protected. Now, monopoly is not the only argument here. The second is anti-competitive and unfair business practices. So if social media is your direct source of revenue, like you're an influencer. And I know that's something you would have a lot of trouble explaining to grandma. But okay, let's say you're an influencer or you have a business where you're streaming video and you're, you know, all of a sudden find out, oh, wait a minute, my channel's been taken away from me. So this thing that earned me hundreds of thousands of dollars or maybe even millions, which is a small business asset that your fans enjoy, all of a sudden, boom, cut off unilaterally by YouTube. If I owned 20,000 acres in Pennsylvania and I had the technology to stop rain on my property because I wanted to make it tourist friendly, courts might make me liable for your crop failures, even if you lease the land from me. If I'm trying to grow some tomatoes and you ruin my tomatoes because you have this weather technology. Oh, by the way, it just reminded me that Trump recently, I think I saw this headline, asked in a meeting if we could stop hurricanes by hitting them with nuclear weapons. Now, I pray, and I'm not religious, but I am praying that was a joke, because if it's real, oh my God, what are we in for? Now, back to this anti-competitive thing. There's a bunch of companies that are already suing, like Prager University, which for the most part is cookie cutter conservatism. It's the conservatism I grew up with and you'd see on Sunday morning TV, where, you know, it's a family values and, you know, you want to preserve your, you know, religious heritage, blah, 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 whatever. Anyway, so they make a bunch of videos and some of them are pretty astute and interesting, but they definitely have a point of view. It's not radical by any stretch of the imagination. And they have a bunch of professors and authors and other people doing these videos. Now, they've been demonetized like crazy off of YouTube. I think they said it was something like 40% of their videos have now can't earn money on YouTube. So they're suing. Now, this other woman went in a different direction. Her name is Nasim Agdam, and she shot up YouTube's offices. She showed up with a gun and she shot three people and then killed herself. She's this 39-year-old YouTuber and her channel has been demonetized. So look, I don't know what was going on in her head, but people take their money being taken away from them very seriously. And the fact that these companies encourage you to build a business on their platform and then can snap their fingers and take it away, that's a pretty crazy power to have. Candidate Tulsi Gabbard, same thing. She's running for president. She tried to take out a political ad either during the debate or right after, and they wouldn't let her take out the ad. There's a serious power that they have over people's ability to make a living or to achieve their goals. And I don't even know if it has to go to court, because the Federal Trade Commission does deal with unfair business practices. So in my opinion, as a business guy, but not necessarily a lawyer, when I say necessarily, not at all a lawyer, the FTC is a regulatory body that specializes in anything that reduces competition, leads to higher prices, reduces service quality, or just unfairly impairs certain businesses. So I think this is something they're going to need to look at. The third argument against these platforms would be civil liberties. Now, I didn't come up with this argument, but I think it's a brilliant one. I'm going to read this short quote. This is from Will Chamberlain, and I'm going to link in the show notes to the full article. But here's what he says. The vast majority of serious public debate takes place there, and by there he means on social media. Thus, access to large social media platforms is a civil right. When private companies violate civil rights, we pass laws to stop them from doing so. And that's what we should do here. And again, look, that's Will's opinion, and I think it's an interesting way to make this argument. And already a court has upheld that Trump can't block private citizens from his account. So the civil liberties argument isn't really that far a stretch. And again, someone's going to have to make that stretch. The fourth argument, which also I think no one's really talked about, and that's why you have me, is compliance. So if Twitter, Facebook, and Google, or Google's YouTube, have any kind of federal contracts, and Google definitely does, they have to comply with federal laws, including the First Amendment and affirmative action, drug-free workplace, minimum wages. So all of this is mandated, and it's mandated in multiple levels, not just at the federal level, but if they have state contracts, the states are going after companies. If any of these arguments are upheld by the courts, then the hate speech argument for banning people goes away, because the Supreme Court unanimously ruled that hate speech is not a legal principle that can be enforced federally. Until then, all of these platforms, they're going to be magnets for lawsuits and public scorn and regulation and legislation. All of it is completely avoidable. There is a simple solution staring at Twitter right in the face. Twitter's already implemented it. let's talk about how Twitter works right now. Twitter prioritizes your newsfeed, right? They decide what you get to see first. So they do it based on your interests, accounts that you've interacted with before, popular tweets from people that you follow, popular tweets that are liked by people that you follow. These are the things they think you will enjoy. And it also gives you this option to just sort everything by time and sit there and just be overwhelmed by the drama of the world or the stupidity of it. Same thing goes for when you tweet. So depending on the timing and the popularity of your tweets, they decide who sees it and who doesn't. So the idea would be to do the same thing Twitter does with porn. Oh, wait a minute. Did you not know that Twitter hosts porn? Oh yeah, Twitter hosts hardcore porn. Yes, it is insane. I know it sounds like you're super innocent. And listen, if you don't know this, you are the kind of person I need in my life. No, in my family. I want you to date my daughter. No, I demand it. So not only is there porn on the platform, but it's the nastiest, dirtiest stuff you can imagine. Everything, photos, videos, fluids. Okay, not the fluids, but at least not on you. But you don't see it. Why don't you see it? When you pull up tweets, when you search, why doesn't it come up, even accidentally? And believe me, it's not because your friends aren't perverts. They totally are, all of them. They are all perverts. But that's not why it's not coming up. Twitter created this walled off Twitter, like a separate Twitter world. And the only way you get to see it is if you seek it out and you follow those accounts. Only then are they going to start showing up in your feed and whatever they like and all that other stuff. But you have to go seek it out. So the solution to deflect all of this scorn, all of this animosity, is staring at Twitter right from its own servers. And the exact same thing can be applied to YouTube and Facebook. Just create a fork in the road. It's super simple. So the main platform would stay exactly as it is with, you know, the crazy social justice warriors, the bans that no one can understand. And you can do whatever Twitter normally does. And if you want to live in that universe, that should be your default universe, because then you're protected. You know, then Twitter is a safe space or a safe-ish space. They can't control everything. But okay, the only difference I'm suggesting is instead of banning these edgy people, you pornify them. So you kind of put them in this separate world, kind of like the porn world is right now. The only way people would see them is if they follow them directly, or you can let people opt in to these different hot button topics. So then you can have the best of both worlds. People get to choose. Yes, choose. Which do they want? Do they want the Twitter that they have today, or unfiltered Twitter? Now, there should be two ways to get there. You could either choose specific accounts that are maybe a little bit racy and opt in to see them, or just opt in to a completely unfiltered Twitter. I'm not saying leave people in this wild west. You give people some power tools, some ways to tweak their experience, because there's still going to be stuff they don't want to see. People can subscribe or block certain categories, which I think Twitter's doing now. They're letting you follow categories. And just think of it as a giant equalizer. Then you can fine tune exactly what you want to hear, but it's in your hands. What topics, what hashtags, what curse words, which flagged accounts. Do you want to see anonymous accounts or unverified accounts? Accounts with a minimum number of followers. All of this stuff. It's super easy. There's nothing stopping any of these companies from doing it. I think that much of the frustration is coming from how opaque all of this is. It would be great if they provided some transparency and accountability and some sort of feedback, because right now this algorithm, which is an easy way to hide behind something, because you say, oh, well, it was the algorithm. I'm like, what? Did the algorithm spawn from God's plan? Or did you and a bunch of coders put this thing together? Of course. So the algorithm is another way to say people make these decisions. Explain to people how your reputation scores are. Just like Uber, whether you're a driver or you're a passenger, you have a score. So you know what kind of horrible human being you are and what people think of you. And yes, have some sort of policy that you could communicate, like a three strikes policy that flags you, but also give people a road back, give them some sort of redemption, let them know what they can do to, you know, to get back into the main Twitter, not just the, you know, porny, like unfiltered Twitter that people opt into. And of course, if you're an advertiser, you can choose how aggressively you want to advertise. Do you want to do it just on the sanctioned channels, or are you okay on the unfiltered channels? But I think it's important to give people the power. I want to talk a little bit about why I think the ability to speak online is so important. First is, freedom of speech is core to any kind of freedom. And it's kind of unfortunate that we're living in a time where this actually needs to be explained. There are people who've done a really good job explaining why freedom of speech is important. I'm going to post some links to that. But I'm going to jump into some specifics about digital free speech. At this point, digital silence is silence. What are you going to do? You're going to yell out the window? You're going to go in Times Square with the, what are they called? The black Israelites that still literally stand on soapboxes and tell you how awful the Jews are, even though they call themselves Israelites. It's really confusing. But what are you going to do? You're going to tap out your message in Morse code. You're going to send a telegram. You're going to email 1,000 people in your alumni group. You're going to tell your dad how you feel about the president Thanksgiving? No, you got to save that for strangers online. We're getting to a point very quickly where these digital platforms have to be protected, just like cell phones, right? At some point, it was just like a nice to have, only rich people had them, or some guy who, you know, took out his giant phone, immediately got laid by the waitress because oh my God, he must be important. He's got a giant phone the size of a brick. Now, you could make the argument that a person who doesn't have that cell phone is going to be disadvantaged and probably have fewer opportunities. And internet access is that way. And these platforms hold your friends, fans, colleagues hostage. That, you know, that's where these people are. You don't have most of their email addresses. It's so interesting to look at the transition between how laws were written in the past and how we're writing them now. We used to punish mainly based on outcome, right? Did this person who stabbed this other person kill them? Then we started doing more in punishing the act itself. So even if the person lived, you can still have attempted murder, right? Because that was the act that was being punished. But now we're moving upstream, which is what was in that person's mind or in their heart when they chose to stab them. Now, the result is still the same. You're equally dead. But we've transitioned into thought crime, mind crime. Now we're creating a whole new set of rules based on hate crimes that punish differently depending on what you felt when you attacked and stabbed this person. This gets especially dangerous when applied to free speech, because now hate speech is the kissing cousin of hate crime, and it's endorsed by a lot of the same people. On the surface, it seems like a great idea. People shouldn't be hateful, and hateful people should be punished for their actions or the consequences of their actions. But when we change our expectations of government and corporations to regulate feelings instead of actions or outcomes, that's a very dangerous place when it comes to free speech, because feelings are subjective, they're relative. So if you stop people from talking based on how one person feels, that can create a stifling effect when everyone else's feelings are taken into account and the box is this tiny of what can actually be said that doesn't hurt everybody's feelings. This is a clip from Jason Whitlock, who is an outspoken football commentator. Love this guy. And he made a great point.
I think a lot of this stuff we're doing now is about, we want to change the way people feel. You can't control the way your wife feels. You can't control the way your child feels. How the hell are you going to control the feelings of people you don't even interact with? It just can't happen.
We're trying to regulate things that are based on emotions. And doing that is going to be way more oppressive than any damage that words can cause. With all the political hysteria and everyone running around screaming, we're in fascism, while carrying a cup of Starbucks, we're emotionally primed for terrible decisions. It's like, you know, like if a parent dies, God forbid, and all of a sudden you're sitting in that room and the, what are they even called? The morgue director, funeral director? They try to upsell you. Gertrude, we are so sorry for your loss. This beautiful green velour-lined coffin. It has everything your father would want. It's got a sunroof, Netflix, even this little red button he can press in case of a clerical error. It's only $38,000. It's what he would have wanted with a new season of Black Mirror coming out. They take advantage of you. This is what's happening now. We're prepared to use force, government force, corporate force, to enforce people's feelings. This is when bad decisions are made. This is when freedoms are surrendered. This is exactly what happened after 9/11. We completely turned our brains off when it came to the Patriot Act, which signed away a bunch of freedoms and gave us monitoring of the entire population. Or when it came to invading Iraq, which had nothing to do with anything. There were no Iraqis on those planes. We are in that same position now where we're using emotions to make decisions. And this is when values and principles matter most. You can't bend to mobs and you can't bend to the emergency of the moment. If your principles never lead you to defend somebody you disagree with, you don't have any. And it doesn't matter how terrible they are. Yes, if they're doing something illegal, of course. But short of that, deal with it. And speaking of law, we already have laws, right? We have laws against inciting violence, against defamation, against libel, discrimination. So all of these things, if they're illegal, of course they should be taken care of and these people taken down. And there are some borderline cases. Like, I don't even know what to do with this one. There's this 14-year-old girl who's sort of like a female young Milo Yiannopoulos, who's also kind of a troll. So she would troll Muslims and gays and other people from a right-wing perspective. And some of her stuff is satire, but in her satire, she uses some violent terms where she'll say, make sure to blame me in your manifestos. Look, I get that satire. It may not be the greatest comedy in the world, but I could also see someone who isn't that bright or is already kind of triggered seeing it and going, I better start printing this manifesto because I don't have a lot of time. You know, in that case, maybe a warning label or a minimum age or something, or, you know, banning. But I would err on the side of betting on people rather than on unregulated censors, because I think we're smarter than that. And I still, you know, I hold that hope for us. And I know maybe I'm the stupid one here. It's not just laws. We have social norms to keep us in check. You know, you still get fired if you post ridiculous things. And we're living at a time where your ridiculousness is not just judged by the people around you. Because throughout all of history, it was like, oh, the village elder who knows that you're a screw up is going to say, okay, well, you know, we're going to punish him, but not that seriously. Or it's like, oh, this guy always says crazy things. Even your coworkers kind of get it if it's in the context of your personality. So now it's no longer just the people you know who are passing judgment on you and keeping you in check, but a bunch of strangers, and some of them with bad intentions, or malicious, or maybe not all right in the head, who are now oppressing you with consequences, even though they have no context for who you are or the things you say. Because you know what? If you took a transcript of almost any comedy routine from today's era or any other era, and you just typed it up and put it in a blog post, it would look offensive, unfunny. But you know what? If you hear it in the context of a routine, in the context of that person's personality, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I get it. But we're refusing to do that. We've expanded the scope infinitely, and we're letting a bunch of strangers bully and bludgeon people over things that weren't even meant for them. They're trying to cancel people who they're not fans of, shows they don't watch, products they don't use. It is so cynical. And the reason the Supreme Court said that hate speech does not exist as a legal principle is it's too subjective. It's impossible for Twitter to have a policy that's consistent with everyone's feelings of whether someone's being hateful to them. So right now on Twitter, for example, you can get banned for dead naming, which is a term that now exists for all of 4 seconds. But the idea is you're calling someone who's trans a she when they've converted to he or vice versa. So you're calling them the wrong gender. And I understand the impulse to be nice. Like in person, of course, any decent human being, no matter who they are, of course they're going to be polite. But these platforms aren't for that. You don't go on there. And by the way, calling me a girl would not be the worst thing I've been called. I mean, you just need to handle these things. And I don't think banning is the right way to do it. If you have these kinds of sensitivities, this may not be the place for you. And there are other people like that guy, Cesar Sayoc, the shooter who I can't even keep all the shooters straight anymore, honestly. But he shot up a bunch of people. And that guy was sending all kinds of actual threatening, violent messages. And he wasn't banned. But the guy who said he instead of she, that guy's gone. And then when you try to automate, it's even worse because there was a headline. I didn't read the article because all these articles look the same now. Google's algorithm for detecting hate speech is racial. Biased. So, you know, as I said earlier, there's no such thing as an algorithm. There's people who write code and that code is dumb. And I know people like to position it as smart. Oh, we have AI. So that'll bump up your stock price or get more investors. But at the end of the day, there's people that are writing code and all their biases are going to be baked in. And there's a bunch of stuff not even going to know what it's going to do. It's going to ban a bunch of stuff that shouldn't be and vice versa. The other part that I think is more insidious, and this is something we never really think about, is we're sitting inside of a huge consolidation of power. Every industry is merging, not just media companies, every industry. I wrote a whole post about this called Why Monopoly is the Future, and we love it. In this consolidation, you're not just concentrating economic power or power to provide you products. You're also consolidating voice, who gets to have it and who doesn't. Once a company reaches a certain size, they're playing defense, not offense. They're always going to cut away all the pieces that jeopardize profits, always. And media complies. These are their advertisers. You lose an advertiser, you lose an entire industry now. Because before, it's like, well, you know, if we don't get Kraft Foods, we'll have P&G or whatever. You're down to like 2 companies, all right? So you lose 1 company, you're losing an industry or 50% of an industry now. That's like Adam pissing off Eve and never getting sex again, and none of us get born. You know, so Adam has got to walk on eggshells, and that's how media is today. So at this moment, the most critical thing that we could be doing is protecting individualism. And we need to err on the side of more voices, not fewer voices. So it's more important to have more people talking who are outside of the establishment, because the establishment keeps growing in scope and power and interconnectedness. Even if those voices are sometimes crackpots, these fringe figures occasionally introduce valid people and ideas into our discourse. There's this guy, Mike Cernovich. He's like a right winger, and he's one of the guys who pushed the Pizzagate conspiracy theory that said there's a child pornography ring being run out of some pizza parlor. And so all of these loons, some guy I think came in with a gun and tried to shoot up the place. Really crazy. Now, Cernovich didn't incite that. But of course, if you're sharing this stuff, you're gonna attract a lot of loons. And what's interesting about it is Cernovich is also the guy who brought Jeffrey Epstein to court the second time around, because he was the one who paid, I forgot how much he paid. He paid like 25 grand of his own money to unseal the records of his child pornography ring. So this guy actually did some good. Even if you think Cernovich is a complete maniac, this guy now actually is a killer, if you think about it, because Epstein killed himself. So, you know, Cernovich brought him to justice, but also sort of killed him. All right, I don't mean that. I mean that in jest, Mike, in case you're thinking of suing me, and clearly you have the money. So my point is, people that were tempted to discount completely can sometimes be right. So all of the ranting and raving about pedophile rings actually turned out to be not exactly like Cernovich and Alex Jones were saying, but worse. There was a whole island filled with presidents and prime ministers who were having sex with children. So if you heard a ranting lunatic say it, you'd be like, wait a minute, this cannot be true. In fact, a bunch of people now, I'm sure, are tuning out because they're like, it's beyond their comprehension. It's almost as insane as the molestation charges against priests. It's like, how many priests? Thousands? And it's all a cover-up by the church? It's almost too much for people to handle cognitively. So they shut down and they go back to their day because they're like, oh my God, I can't even believe this kind of thing can happen. But it does happen. And I know a lot of people are afraid that these people are going to trigger all kinds of violence. These people are human cartoons. I'm going to play you a clip of Alex Jones now. Listen to this guy. If this guy is leading a movement, he's not the problem. We're completely misdiagnosing.
What do I do, Lord?
Destroy the child. Corrupt them all.
This is their plan, people. These are demons. Just like the Bible says, it's basically an intergalactic invasion into this space through people. I'm telling you, it's what all the ancients said. It's what they warned of. It's what we're dealing with. They're demons. They're freaking interdimensional invaders, okay? I'll just say it. Make fun of me all you want on CNN or wherever, but everyone already innately knows this. These people are not freaking humans, okay? Hillary Clinton is a goddamn demon.
Seriously? This is the guy we're afraid of? This is the guy we think is going to jeopardize free speech? If this guy is the leader of anything at all, we are badly misdiagnosing the problem. The problem isn't this guy. That's the symptom. The problem is the person who's turning this moron into a martyr. The people are broken. They're ill-equipped to use critical thinking. When you hear a guy like this, you're like, oh my God, this guy couldn't possibly have anything sane to say. Yes, maybe 95% of what he says is complete dog shit. But you know what? Sometimes we need to fish out that 5%. I've met a lot of crazy people over the years. Even the craziest have had something redeeming about them. I'm making an argument for letting this guy talk, but I'm also making an argument for making us smarter. And if we create this world where we're throwing whole people into the trash instead of debating their ideas, is a really dangerous concept, but it's especially dangerous now. Independent thinkers are our last line of defense, because otherwise we're talking consolidation and conformity. When consolidation and lobbying merges the interests of these giant corporations and government, we have no choice but to protect independent voices, no matter how distasteful they might be. The other reason this is important is silence is not victory. I mentioned before that digital speech is free speech, but digital silence is not silence. It's only the illusion of victory, because we've been treating the symptom, not the cause. The cause has been festering underground. And you know how I can prove it? We've been busy banning racists and trolls and incels, which basically is a guy who doesn't get laid, but somehow finds the time to get organized and meet other guys who also can't get laid instead of getting organized to make himself attractive and go find girls. But okay, fine. And we tried to ban white supremacists, and none of it works. First, we banned them from Reddit. They moved on to 4chan.
We banned them from 4chan. When I say we, you and I didn't do shit, but the platforms banned them. And guess what? They went over to 8chan. And pretty soon they're going to have 16chan, a 32chan, a Jackie Chan. There's going to be lots more chans. You didn't solve the problem. Now, Telegram is becoming the way white nationalists organize. And Telegram is encrypted. And after that, it's going to be some open source blockchain system that's going to be impossible to track. You know how pissed I'm going to be if this whole banning process makes blockchain successful? We'll never hear the end of it from these douchebags. If you're ever at a cocktail party and someone says Bitcoin or blockchain, you will be stuck there for 3 hours. You want to escape. You'll be blinking to your partner to leave desperately, but you will not, because this person is going to have a crazy amount of passion and nothing he says, it's always a he, you will never hear the end of it, because this thing will be solving everything. Cancer, it'll be solving, you know, the financial crisis and freedom of speech, all vaporware, but it doesn't matter. If you guys end up making blockchain successful because all the trolls and white nationalists move over there, I'm going to be really pissed. So all these guys are hopping platform to platform. But the shootings, did they decrease? Did the world become nicer? Did you win? You didn't win. You made them more aggressive. You put them in a place where it's harder to track. I am against anything that incites violence. That's clearly banned by the First Amendment. But these forums, I'd rather have all of the other legal and horrible ideas debated and confronted on there and traceable by the FBI and by local authorities where all these guys can be monitored, rather than having them scatter elsewhere and go underground and fester somewhere else. This is in all of our best interests. You need to be able to see it to confront it. But if you can't see it, you can't. We're only hurting ourselves because silence is not victory. And no one wants to do the hard work of changing people's minds. We have to take care of this. This is not for some unauthorized authorities to take care of. Who's trustworthy enough to say what's hateful to whom? Or what's pseudoscience? Is it the pharma industry that advertises on mainstream media? And they go, oh, well, all of this stuff, CBD oil and all this other stuff, that's all pseudoscience. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But who gets to decide? Who gets to decide what's fake news? The president, who's got an axe to grind with everybody, or other people that have agendas, they get to decide what's fake news? Smarter consumers neutralize shady producers, not these unaccountable third parties. We're on a slippery slope. This silencing of people will not only happen to people you disagree with. That is a very naive notion. Administrations change, regulators change, management changes at companies. So if you're relying on all of these third parties to enforce your values, don't be surprised when someone shows up with different values and you're the recipient of the enforcement. This is a very shallow victory. Unaccountable censorship is going to come and bite you in the ass. People think that it's left versus right or right versus left. That's not what's happening here. If you look a little bit deeper, a lot of what's happening is large silencing small, commercial silencing alternative. And I mentioned slippery slope. It's actually happening right now. Infrastructure companies are now getting into the free speech wars. So companies that are just web hosts are now banning based on speech. You should be able to get a website host that's not evaluating your politics. And some of these companies are monopolies too. If you want protection from denial of service attacks, Cloudflare is one of the main providers, if not the main provider. So if they refuse you service, you don't have a lot of choices. Ad networks, AppNexus, which banned the conservative site Breitbart, and then AT&T, after they bought AppNexus, restored their service. Because I think AT&T is already a monopoly. So they're like, oh, you know what? We're just not going to deal with the regulatory scrutiny. These tools, they are the piping of freedom now. If you think I'm over-dramatizing, the scariest thing that's actually happened so far is a bunch of financial services companies took away financial processing power from a website called Gab. Now, Gab is kind of an alternative Twitter, but it's dark. Oh my God. I went to check the site out. It is like all the darkest memes. They're not necessarily, they're not violent, but there's just a lot of angry trolls. Like if you took all the trolls that were banned from all the other networks and you put them on one network, that's what Gab is. Now, even there, I don't think it's illegal. I don't think it should be banned. But imagine what happens now. Stripe, which is a payments processor, PayPal, also a payments processor, Joyent, all of these companies completely banned Gab from receiving payments. And crypto is not going to be the answer either. First of all, no one uses Bitcoin or any of these other currencies. There's maybe a few hundred thousand hardcore people that have actually used it for a transaction, and half of them are gun dealers. They're looking to take over some small Latin American country. And the five people who are spending cryptocurrency, those people are buying it on private exchanges that are going to be subject to the same exact pressures that traditional companies are subject to, probably more because they're smaller. That's another thing that happened. MasterCard and PayPal just said to Patreon, hey, these accounts that are saying controversial things, take them down. And Chase Bank closed down a whole bunch of right-winger accounts. And not even people who are necessarily that controversial. I mean, they're on YouTube. It's not that crazy. Or some guy who was making t-shirts with anti-lefty trolling type of slogans. What's funny is Chase Bank passing moral judgment on others. I mean, you know, we've all lived through the recession, right? What's next? Popeye's chicken kicking me out because I'm a little overweight? Oh no, sir. Yeah, you can't have that second chicken sandwich. Which, by the way, I heard was good and it's not available anymore. Way to plan, Popeye's. I think it's smart to do one innovation every 35 years. Can't wait for the next one. I'll be in diapers by then so I could eat as many as I want. I think it's okay if you're a small business and you don't want to do business with somebody, as long as people have a choice. But increasingly, we don't have a choice. And companies that are becoming monopolies, you can't just have them snap their fingers and take you down, especially if they're payments companies. Paper money's disappearing. If you need to pay someone online, you need access to receiving payments from people. That can't be dictated by private company for any reason except illegal activity or if there's a court mandate. Financial firms, they got to follow the law. They can't draft it. So whenever your lifestyle is deemed unsavory to banks, they get to cut you off. What if they don't like your nipple clamps and you happen to walk around in nipple clamps? Can they ban you? What if you're a performance artist who takes a dump on M&M's, or worse, takes a dump on Eminem the rapper with his consent, of course? Can they ban you? I don't know. Where's their line? Can we check with Chase what's okay and what's not okay? I mean, you see how crazy this is, and this is actually happening right now. Don't assume that your lifestyle or your preferences will be protected in this new oppressive environment of banning. This guy, Eric Prince, the guy who runs Cloudflare, he gets regular requests from Middle Eastern governments to take down sites of LGBTQ activists for corrupting children. On one level, it's like maybe he should ignore the request, but what if someone's life is in danger? What if the government taking it down might actually save that person from harm because they can be identified? It's not so clear cut. And look, I can't speak for other countries, but if Middle Eastern governments are making these kinds of requests, our governments will be making these kinds of requests, especially if you create mushy criteria. We can't afford anything mushier than the First Amendment. That has to be the line. It has to. Otherwise, we are down the slippery slope. And that is already happening. The U.S. is the only country that protects free speech as a right. It's not Canada. It's not the U.K. It's not Australia. It's not France. It's insane what goes on there. Canada, for example, you can go to jail or be fined for using the wrong pronoun. Australia, video games are regulated and banned, certain ones. France, certain words are banned, like deodorant. I'm just kidding, France. It's just a joke. Don't send your Navy sommeliers after me. There's a guy who's convicted and fined in France for insulting the former French prime minister. He had a sign that says, "Get lost, jerk." And of course, the irony is that's a phrase Sarkozy used himself against somebody else. Paris fined ACT UP, the gay rights activist organization. They fined them 2,300 euros for calling someone a homophobe during a demonstration in 2013. In 2015, France convicted 12 pro-Palestinian activists because they were wearing Long Live Palestine, Boycott Israel shirts. So we all can imagine Russia not the most receptive to free speech. If you say anything disparaging about the government, you can go to jail. But more likely, you'll be irradiated. One day you'll be eating your pierogi, and a few days later, you'll have your own personal Chernobyl. And by the way, did you know that Putin's daughter's name is Plutonia? True story. In Russia, you can be gay and go to jail. And that's if you're lucky, because that country is filled with a bunch of macho mutants that will beat the crap out of you if you're gay. But secretly, they just want to kiss you and each other while listening to an Elton John song. Hey, little genie. I've never seen a bunch of people more insecure. I guarantee you, there are a bunch of dildos buried. There's a German rock band called Rammstein. And they were performing in Russia. The singer and, I think the guitarist kissed on stage in defiance of their gay propaganda law, which is what it's called. This is what's going on all over the world. And more often than not, in Europe, hate speech laws are used to suppress and punish the left wing, not the right wing, as fashionable here, at least on social networks. On paper, it all sounds great. It's like, oh, we're just trying to be nice. Being nice does not work. Not mandatory niceness, because people get silenced. And that is not good for anybody. Canada threatened to use their hate speech laws to prosecute Israel boycott actors. It appears there's a trend here where people don't seem to like Israel. Do we really want to live in a world where great Baba Ganoush counts for nothing? Nothing? And then there's a comedian in Canada who got fined $42,000 for making fun of a disabled kid. Listen, you shouldn't do it, but no one should be fined for that. Maybe in context, the kid wanted to be made fun of. I don't know. I don't know what the context was, so I'm not going to pretend I know this case. But some people might want to feel like everybody else. If you're going to make fun of me if I'm not crippled, I'd want you to treat me the same if I am crippled, because that is real equality. Real equality is being treated the same as everybody else. And I know the impulse is good, but the net effect is terrible and oppressive. Now, Singapore canes people for spitting gum onto the street. Yes, that means they beat them with a cane. I hope that's some really good gum. So it's no surprise that they suppress a bunch of human rights activists, especially anyone who criticizes Christianity. So they have some Muslims that were criticizing Christianity. No one's seen them again. No, that's not true. I'm sure you could find them, but in pieces and covered in gum. It's inevitable. Hate speech laws will fall in the wrong hands. Or not even laws, hate speech policies at these companies. They will be used to stifle freedom. All over the EU, they've created this code of conduct for hate speech. And in Germany, they passed their own law. So now they're forcing social media platforms to enforce hate speech policy and hate speech law. Even the UK, you have to get a license to go to porn sites. Can you imagine walking into the local bodega and going, do they call them bodegas in the UK? There's probably a more British-y term for that. Or actually, no, they do have a term for it, but it's super racist. Oh, man. Okay, I can't say it, but it has to do with people from Pakistan, because apparently that's who typically owns these shops. Anyway, British people, not so nice. But okay, they have those pretty accents and everyone here is like, oh, they're British. I must have sex with them. Anyway, Can you imagine you literally have to go to some bodega and ask the guy for a license? Alex, I'll take Asian girls for $200, furries for $300, and dwarves for $500. Please, please don't tell anyone about the dwarves. Is that my card? Great. And this bag of chips. Off you go to the spank bank. Can you imagine? This is what they're up to. Now, there are ways to work around it, and I'm sure people will find it, but a lot of people won't. And that's the problem. The UK, they did this other thing. They banned gender stereotypes in advertising. They wanted to make sure that ads don't put women into some sort of exploitative and coercive position. Now, sounds great on paper, right? That makes a lot of sense. And guess what's happening now? There's a perfume ad with Cara Delevingne. Okay, I don't know how to say this, but she's naked, but obviously not completely, on a bed. This thing was banned because they thought it was offensive to women. So they're setting rights back for women. You know, women fought hard to have the same ability to appear naked, or just like men can take their shirts off, so should women. All of this stuff. So now it's like, we must stop offensive and demeaning ads. And everyone's like, yes, queen, yes. And then everyone finds something offensive or demeaning, and everything is banned. Mission accomplished. So we're actually doing more harm than good. Well-intentioned idiots doing more harm than evil masterminds. And the UK, you think it stops there? It doesn't. 3,000 people have been arrested in London alone over the last 5 years for offensive posts on social media. In 2015 alone, 857 people were detained. Police are cautioning people from using certain words and to report offensive posts. This has become a police matter. There was a 19-year-old girl who was convicted of sending a grossly offensive message, again, hate speech law, after she posted rap lyrics that included the N-word. She literally copied and pasted someone else's lyrics from their song, and she got convicted of offensive speech. Then there's this guy, oh my God, this is the craziest thing. This guy spent thousands of whatever weird money they use over there and pounds. Sorry, I couldn't think of the word. This guy put up a funny video. He taught his girlfriend's pug to do the Heil Hitler salute. Now, this is stuff Benny Hill used to do. This is stuff, you know, like cartoonish 70s comedians. If you don't know who Benny Hill is, just look him up. He's ridiculous. He was a British comedian. And he would do these like sped up little bits or whatever. And he would do impressions of Hitler and all kinds of other characters. Anyway, it was a ridiculous show. This was a ridiculous thing. This was obviously a satirical, goofy thing. This guy got 6 months in prison. 6 months for a stupid video. This guy's not a hateful person. I've heard him interviewed. He's just a guy who's goofing around with his girlfriend and finding ways to ruin his relationship like most guys. What is going on? UK, get your shit together. But this is our slippery slope too. Right as I was about to publish this episode, New York City and its Commission on Human Rights put a $250,000 fine on calling someone an illegal alien. So using the term illegal alien to, quote, demean, humiliate, or harass a person is illegal under law. This is totally against the First Amendment. I'm sure someone will sue. But this is where people's heads are at. This is the walls of free speech closing in. This is the road to totalitarianism. This is how you feed the power of nefarious people. If you think Trump is a horrible person, can you imagine him having the power to ban people based on hate speech laws? He thinks everyone hates him. He's kind of right when it comes to media and a lot of other people, but he will be able to use these laws to silence people. So it's not always going to work in your favor. And Same thing with these companies. Right now, they happen to agree with the left. But I think that's more of a convenience play than anything else. They want to appear righteous while raking in all kinds of cash. They're not on your side. They're on the side of money. And they're saying whatever is going to take to maximize profit, including feeding you the lies you need to hear. No one is going to protect you from getting offended. And the minute you demand it, you're sacrificing the fundamentals of what makes us free. When you take away everybody's knives, no one gets stabbed, but no one gets dinner either. And we're leaving people defenseless. I know there are fragile people out there. You might be one of them. I can't believe you're still listening, but okay. Stop making the world conform to your weaknesses. Creating a phony bubble of niceness is the worst thing you could do to a person. You're going to create a country of defenseless little lambs or people who scream whenever they hear something they disagree with. I'd rather toughen up my kids to be able to handle anything than declaw them by nerfing the world and sweeping stuff under the rug. I get it. We weren't meant to be in touch with the world. Okay. None of us are handling it well. Whether we're addicted to scrolling through Instagram or we're missing concerts because we're looking through our phone screens. So if you have this weakness, toughen up those muscles. A tougher you is better for you also. But stop restricting everyone else. I fucking hate The Little Mermaid, but I don't petition Disney to make her into tuna. Some things are not for me. And maybe social media and Twitter is not for you. And yes, those companies need to do a better job and give us better filters. And believe me, I'm not immune to it. I stopped reading comments on my articles a long time ago. I'd post something on LinkedIn and I just leave it. Because what I found was, it's not that I couldn't handle it. I could, but it put me in a bad mood. And it also consumed a lot of my time where I felt like I had to spend time defending myself. And that's time I'm not spending creating the next thing. So I stopped doing it. And there may be things you have to stop too in order to preserve your mental health. But don't make everyone else stop it for you. Any free society is not going to be free from risk. There's always going to be some soft-brained idiot or crackpot who gets radicalized by some Alex Jones type or a Starbucks cup holder because he sees Satan in it. You know, like, you don't know. You can't say, oh, all right, Starbucks, you got to take your logo off this thing because it reminds a crazy lunatic of Satan. We have to go to the core and we have to make people accountable again. I know it sounds old-fashioned. It is. And there's a reason for that. It works. That's it for this part of it. Hopefully, I've established a pretty good burning platform. Next, I'm going to get into the second level of this game. Because this is all first-level kind of stuff. This is all observable, things that we can see. There's a much deeper game that's being played right now. Now, if you're a Patreon subscriber, and everyone who listens to this should be, go to patreon.com/TheMcFuture. I'll actually have the link in the show notes. But that episode is out right now for you. But you, the rest of you who are trying to save money or trying to gyp me out of getting, I don't know, whatever I can afford on your Patreon, maybe a new chicken sandwich that's available at Popeyes. But you will have to wait till next week. Anyway, I'm Steve Factor for The McFuture. Don't forget, if you enjoyed this, share it with others. Review it on iTunes. I could use the extra boost. So thanks for listening. Talk to you next week or in 5 minutes as you get the bonus episode on Patreon.